Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. The great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of Lord Sri Krishna, always remain fearless in every respect, and therefore their feet trample over the Sudharma assembly house, which the best demigods deserved, but which was taken away from them. Purport. Those who are directly servitors of the Lord are protected by the Lord from all fearfulness, and they also enjoy the best of things, even if they are forcibly accumulated. The Lord is equal in behavior to all living beings, but He is partial to His pure devotees, being very affectionate towards them. The city of Dwaraka was flourishing, being enriched with the best of things in the material world. The state assembly house is constructed according to the dignity of the particular state. In the heavenly planets, the state assembly house called Sudharma was deserving of the dignity of the best of the demigods. Such an assembly house is never meant for any state on the globe because the human being on the earth is unable to construct it. However far a particular state may be materially advanced, but during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on the earth, the members of the Yadu dynasty family forcibly brought the celestial assembly house to earth and placed it at Dwaraka. They were able to use such force because they were certain of the indulgence and protection of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, the Lord is provided with the best things in the universe by His pure devotees. Lord Krishna was provided with all kinds of comforts and facilities available within the universe by the members of the Yadu dynasty, and in return such servitors of the Lord were protected and fearless. A forgetful conditioned soul is fearful, but a liberated soul is never fearful, just as a small child completely dependent on the mercy of his father is never fearful of anyone. Fearfulness is a sort of illusion for the living being when he is in slumber and forgetting his eternal relation with the Lord. Since the living being is never to die by his constitution, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:20, then what is the cause of fearfulness? A person may be fearful of a tiger in a dream, but another man who is awake by his side sees no tiger there. The tiger is a myth for both of them, namely the person dreaming and the person awake, because actually there is no tiger. But the man forgetful of his awakened life is fearful, whereas the man who has not forgotten his position is not at all fearful. Thus the members of the Yadu dynasty were fully awake in their service to the Lord, and therefore there was no tiger for them to be afraid of at any time. Even if there were a real tiger, the Lord was there to protect them. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Miti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So thank you for allowing me again to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. And I would like to ask and seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas present here and those which are online. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vansha kalpa turupyascha kripa sindhu bhya eva cha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavabhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. So we can see still we're continuing with the conversation and how Yudhishthir Maharaj is still approaching Arjuna, and he's giving different instances of devotees now specifically present in Dwarka, and he's remembering how all these personalities have been constantly protected by Krishna, right? So just like Prabhupada was mentioning in the purport, if a child feels the protection of the father, he's not fearful at any time. Therefore, Krishna is in this position like a father, like a protector, like a family member to them. And therefore, by them being connected to Krishna, they had no fear. So I was thinking, just do a bit of a kind of a comparative study today. And I was thinking in the first stanza or in the first paragraph, he was speaking about the opulence. He was speaking about the opulence of Dwarka, specifically this assembly house. So this assembly house was taken by force by the Yadus from the heavenly regions. And the Yadus, by being fully aware that Krishna is behind us, therefore, and we actually providing this for Krishna, is not like for us, that we're going to be fully enjoying this facility of this Sudharma assembly house. You know, I don't think we can fully imagine the material opulence provided by this Sudharma assembly house. I've done a bit of a research, and in the Krishna book and later on in the Bhagavatam was actually described the beauty of this assembly house. Just imagine marble everywhere, jewels, diamonds, gold, all the celestial flowers and celestial trees. It is mentioned that actually in this assembly house there's also a lot of Kalpavriksha trees. So it's not like we only find them in Vrindavan, but they're also being taken to Dwarka. And what's the name of that flower? Parichata? Parichata flower. So Indra, when he kind of heard that Krishna is actually building Dwarka, he gave it as an offering, he gave these flowers. So I was thinking, if we can compare the opulence and the beauty of Dwarka Dham versus the opulence of Vrindavan. So we can see that Krishna, based on his different moods, different pastimes, he performs different, he exhibits different types of opulence. True? So let me ask you now, what do you think is the opulence of Sri Vrindavan Dham? Gopinath Prabhu? Sweetness. Sweetness. Okay, there was a... Yes? Radharani. Radharani, she's the most opulence of Krishna. Yes, very nice. Any other points? What do you think is the opulence of Sri Vrindavan Dham? Govardhan Hill. Yes, definitely. When Krishna was glorifying Govardhan and when he was speaking to Nanda Maharaj, he said, we should actually worship Govardhan, because he provides all the facilities for our cows. He's got a lot of jewels, fresh water, grass, fruits, everything is on Govardhan. So this is the opulence of Vrindavan. Yes, very good. Yes. Madhurya Ras, now we're going deep, okay. Madhurya Ras is the opulence of Vrindavan, true. Yes. Cows. Yes, definitely. And now I would like to read... Now, a bit of, butter and yogurt, that's definitely an opulence. Yes, actually all of these what you mentioned, these are the opulences of Sri Vrindavan Dham. And if I may, I would like to read to you a passage from Krishna book, written by Srila Prabhupada. I think it's very, very beautiful, and it speaks about what is actually the opulence of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So, it is very important to note in this connection how wealthy the inhabitants of Vrindavan were simply by raising cows. All the cowherd men belonged to the Vaishya community, and their business was to protect the cows and cultivate crops. By their dress and ornaments and by their behavior, it appears that although they were in a small village, they still were rich in material possessions. They possessed such an abundance of various kinds of milk products that they were throwing butter lavishly on each other's bodies without restriction. Their wealth was in milk, yogurt, clarified butter, and many other milk products. And by trading their agricultural products, they were rich in various kinds of jewelry, ornaments, and costly garments. Not only did they possess all these things, but they could give them away in charity lavishly, as did Nanda Maharaj. So, the third point which we can actually compare this is that compared to the present age of Kali Yuga. In the present day and age in Kali Yuga, you're considered rich when you have a lot of possessions, cars, houses, and actually numbers on your account. It's not even these days that you are rich in terms of gold, jewels, or any other paraphernalia, but these days it's only numbers. I remember once when I was studying like economics in high school, there was once in France, they have so much money, dollar money, like currency, and they wanted to exchange it for gold. So they approached American banks, and they requested, can we trade this for gold? Well, all the American banks were like, no, we can't. We don't have that. So actually, the possession and wealth, what we call richness in this material world, is actually just ones and zeros. That's all it is. That's how modern Kali Yuga person perceives richness. But you can see that inhabitants of Raj had true opulence. Milk products, clarified ghee, yogurt, and many other things, crops. And why this is considered opulence? Because cow can actually multiply. So your opulence can constantly grow and grow and grow. And this opulence can not only sustain you, but it's actually it's worshipable as a paraphernalia used in offering for the yagyas, right? Because ultimately, whatever is considered opulence needs to be connected to worship of God, right? You can offer ghee, you can offer yogurt, clarified butter, ghee basically, and other milk products. You can make so many beautiful sweets, so many variations, preparations of foodstuff. And this way, the true material opulence needs to be and has to be connected to Krishna. If it's not connected, then it's not a true opulence. So now I would like to compare it to opulence of Dwaraka. We had a bit of a glimpse in Prabhupada's purport that this assembly house was so beautiful, so massive, that even the greatest of demigods, they've been possessing this assembly house, but it was taken away from them. So again, this is mentioned from Prabhupada's Krishna book. So Dwaraka is another term for Dwaraka is Paramamangala, which means the most auspicious place. Almost all the palaces were skyscrapers in Dwaraka. Can you imagine? And we're not talking just metal and, you know, concrete. We're talking, again, jewels, marble, gold. Almost all the palaces were skyscrapers. That's pretty far out. In each and every house, there were underground rooms containing big golden and silver pots for stocking grain. And there were many golden water pots within the rooms. The bedrooms were all bedecked with jewels, and the floors were mosaic pavements of Marakata jewels. The Vishnu deity worshipped by the descendants of Yadu was installed in each house in the city. The residential quarters were so arranged that the different castes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, had their respective quarters. So it's actually mentioned the beauty of Dwaraka. The beauty of Dwaraka is not only in its wealth, but it's also very much connected in the last sentence to Varnashram system. So in this point, I would like to ask you, opulence can be perceived on the gross level. But now I would like to ask you, what is the opulence of different varnas and different ashramas? Right? So let's open it up a bit. Let's start with the Shudras. What is the opulence of the Shudra community? Srinivas Prabhu?
Haribo. Well, according to the story of Prithu Maharaj, anyone who reads the story of Prithu Maharaj, there's a benediction after the story. So Brahmanas get a benediction, the Kshatriyas get a benediction of ruling the kingdom.
Yes.
The Vaishyas get a benediction of becoming opulent. And then someone who's a Shudra, he gets a benediction of becoming a pure devotee.
Mm. Okay.
And he says, out of all the Varnas, Krishna likes the Shudra Varna because they're in the mood of serving.
Okay, so opulence of Shudra community is, let's say, service. How about yes?
They easily follow. They manage the following.
Yeah, I can repeat that just for, you know, make it clear and fast. Any hands up from this side, from ladies' side? What is the wealth of the Shudra community? What about that they are very good at arts? What about that they are very good craftsmen? They can craft many different things. Okay, let's move on. How about the Vaishya community? What is the opulence of the Vaishyas? Money, cows, yes. As we mentioned here in the Vrindavan, is the paraphernalia, like milk products. Yes, any other? What is the wealth of Vaishya community?
Trading, yes.
How about Kshatriyas? What is the opulence of Kshatriyas? Fearlessness.
Protection.
Actually, they can have taxes, right? So the Kshatriya community can actually take based on Dharma from other castes as well, except from Brahmanas. What is now the opulence of Brahman community? Austerity. Renunciation. Knowledge. Definitely knowledge. So it's very interesting how different castes have different levels of opulence, and we can perceive opulence differently. So if you present, let's say, very, very massive book, having a lot of knowledge of Vedanta within, and you present it to a Shudra, saying, this is my gift to you, it will be difficult for him to kind of relate to it. Same thing if you present some massive opulence, gold and thrones and, I don't know, how do you say, crowns to a Brahmana. So I don't have much use for this. So we should understand that opulence depends on your consciousness. What is opulence for you could be something which is not of use for me, and vice versa. So this actually directly indicates that we should be personal. And on a Vaishnava level, we should reciprocate with devotees based on what they consider to be opulence, right? If you want to have nice Vaishnava relationship, you should understand the nature of that person, and based on that, you should present gifts. One of the, in the verses of Nectar of Instruction, is mentioned that devotees, they exchange gifts amongst each other. How can you give something to someone which he doesn't find any value to it and any use for it? So we can see that what one possesses, one considers an opulence for another one is not very useful. So the opulence of Dvaraka is much more different from the opulence of Vrindavan. And as was mentioned here, that there are certain four points, or basically four things, which distinguish Dvaraka Ras from Vrindavan Ras. Of, let's say, Vrindavan Krishna and Dvaraka Krishna. Can anyone tell me what are the four paraphernalias which are the difference between Vasudev and Krishna in Vrindavan? Gopinath. Excuse me? Love, Madhurya Ras, yes. Not specifically. Yes, Venu. Venu is there. Venu, Madhurya. What is the third one? Okay, Leela. Yes, Leela is there. So Rasa, Leela, Venu. Beauty is a form, basically Rupa. So that these are the four differences between Vasudev Krishna and Vrindavan Krishna. And these four differences are actually mirroring the opulence of Vrindavan and Dvaraka Dham. So these are the few points in terms of difference between Dvaraka and Vrindavan. And another part of Srila Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada was speaking about what does it mean to be fearless. In our life, many times we go through many difficulties, and these difficulties are based on our connection with the material world and our connection to the false ego. So I would like to narrate a very, very nice pastime which I found very important. And there's a certain science of fearlessness in it. Our acharyas specifically being very nicely commenting, and I found this by Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur,
and the pastime of Agasur. How the inhabitants, specifically the cowherd boys, have been absolutely fearless. And how the signs of fearlessness actually invoke certain rasa in Krishna. So it's not so technical, but there's a science behind what actually Krishna wants. And how by us being fearless, we invoke emotions and certain activity from the side of Krishna. So, you know, in Vrindavan, Krishna always before lunch, he killed one or two demons just to, you know, have to build up his appetite before the lunch. But in this specific pastime, we know the pastime of Brahma Vimohan Lila, the bewilderment of Brahma. But in this specific pastime, Krishna was bewildered. For a moment, Krishna couldn't understand what is happening in the situation. So what happened, there was this massive python-like demon, Agasur. He took kind of a form, rupa of a python, and he opened his mouth. And this mouth was just so big that the cowherd boys, they couldn't understand that this could not be a creature. It's not possible that this could be some kind of a snake. There are actually two groups of cowherd boys. One was saying, this is very dangerous, we should not play around this area. And another group of cowherd boys said, well, it's just a cave. Look at it, it looks like a cave. So we should enter and have some fun inside. So Krishna resides in the heart of every living being. And his name connected to the super soul is Antaryami. So he very well understood that this is not an ordinary cave. It's actually a demon named Agasur. But he was bewildered because these cowherd boys, they start entering very freely into the mouth of Agasur demon. And the contemplation of the cowherd boys was like, even if this is a demon, even if we are going to be killed, even if something will happen, Krishna is there. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gonitai ki. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's called the Rasa Acharya. And if you read his commentaries, he's very interestingly kind of gives his commentaries. He enters the mind or the persona of the protagonist in this specific situation of Krishna. So he was saying that the thoughts of Krishna, he was bewildered because he actually wanted to save the cowherd boys. And his meditation was now, please don't enter that mouth. Please don't go there. But he couldn't stop them. Because why? Because the desire of his devotees was greater. The desire of the cowherd boys is, if the situation comes, I want to be saved by Krishna. So the mindset of the cowherd boys like, I want to be saved. So this mood of being saved is actually even greater than Krishna's mood of stopping the cowherd boys. It is mentioned that Krishna has this shakti called Satya Sankalpa Shakti, which means the potency to fulfill every desire of the Lord. But this desire was actually stopped. Krishna's desire was literally stopped by greater desire of his devotees. So it was very interesting that Krishna was bewildered for a moment. He was thinking, how is this possible that their fearlessness is based on their connection to me? Their fearlessness is so powerful that they're 100% sure that I will come and save them. So what does it mean for us? It means for us that when we invoke the presence of this fearlessness, Krishna becomes bewildered. That I don't want you to be, you know, in a dangerous situation. And you put me in a situation when I'm obliged to intervene. Who's the most close personality to us who is fearless? Prabhupada. Abhay Charna Arvinda. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So Prabhupada's name was Abhay. Fearless. In every dealing we can see in his pastimes in the Western world, the way Prabhupada was preaching was that he was constantly invoking the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his fearless activities, Krishna was bound to reciprocate with Prabhupada. So there's very interesting, very nice verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is directly saying, how can we develop this fearless kind of a character? It is said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because of my devotees are completely devoid of material desires. I sit only within the course of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. So there are 2 points in this verse which Krishna indicates how to become fearless. Point number one, devoid of material desires. And point number two, become devotee of Krishna's devotees. So by practicing these two activities, by trying to get rid of this material contamination, by getting rid of the material desires and serving the devotees of Krishna's devotees, the fearlessness will come into your life. In the material world, we can specifically see now that this whole virus situation, what happens, it triggers people. It triggers whole countries, whole continents. It triggers everyone to become fear, to have fear in their hearts. This fear is actually based on not understanding your original constitution. Because Prabhupada is saying, what's there to be afraid of if you understand who you are? If you understand that no weapon, no wind, no water, no fire can destroy you. Yes, the body can be destroyed, but nothing can ultimately destroy you. When Shukadev Goswami was once approached and asked to put a dress on himself because he was roaming naked, he said, I already have a dress. I'm already wearing dress. This dress is made of skin, flesh, bones and hairs. This is my dress. That's the true answer. Now, I'm not asking you to do that. We're not on that stage and on that level. But this should be our understanding, that ultimately there's nothing to be afraid of. And even if there is something which to be afraid of, we should always take shelter and seek shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like the cowherd boys and the personalities from Dvaraka have been constantly doing. They've been 100% sure that Krishna will protect them. Why? Because ultimately, they've been there for pleasure of Krishna. And in a commentary by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, it is said that these devotees, the cowherd boys, they actually triggered Karuna Ras in Krishna. Karuna Ras means the rasa of compassion, right? Krishna actually needed the cowherd boys to facilitate his pastime. So he had a great compassion towards them, said, no, they cannot be killed. Same thing with the Yadus. Even if the personalities, these Yadus went to the heavenly regions and they've been challenging so many demigods, they had that strong faith that Krishna will protect them. Just like Prabhupada was mentioning the analogy of a tiger in a dream. So our condition should be like that as well. We should always feel that we are protected by Krishna. Especially here in, you know, Bhaktivedanta Manor, we have great opportunity to be here and to actually be protected by Krishna. Directly by Shishi Radha Gokulananda, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shishi Gornitai. But everyone, all of those devotees all around the globe, they should feel now more than ever the protection of Krishna. Even, as I mentioned before, we have certain understanding what actually protection means for us. And most of the time, we feel that protection is considered a protection of the body, protection of the family, protection of wealth. But what Krishna truly protects is actually the consciousness. He protects the core of our heart and he protects the bhakti within us. So that is the true protection which Krishna always offers for those who are surrendered to him. So I touched a few points. I actually kind of like Jadvaita Maharaj's style of classes. You present a bit and then you leave it for questions and, you know, a bit of churning. So a few points which I mentioned was the opulence of Dvaraka, which was based on a bit of Aishwarya Ras, Aishwarya Mood, all in reverence. And with all that, all in reverence, there needs to be certain paraphernalia. These paraphernalia were in the form of gold, jewels, skyscrapers, beautiful palaces, right? But the opulence of Vrindavan Dham was based on products, simplicity, simple living, high thinking, milk products, and different type of aras. So, and the second point was the point of how can actually we be fearless, and how different personalities been fearless, and how you can actually invoke the presence of Krishna directly in your life by being fearless. Because it triggers Krishna, and he, by you kind of entering into a situation when you're fully dependent on him, Krishna will reciprocate 100%. So I think I will stop there, and I'll kind of open it up for points, questions, suggestions, our Sutapa Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. You talked about the opulence of Vrindavan and about, you know, this kind of pastoral setting of, like, you know, the fields and the cows. And many of us, we grew up as urban slickers, like just in the urban city. And the thought of even, like, you know, the rural setting and all of that, it feels very alien, and many devotees say they can't connect to it. So I just wanted to ask you, is that the opulence of Vrindavan and the opulence of the simple living, high thinking, is that something that every devotee should endeavor to experience and try and tune themselves to? Or is it just that we accept that, okay, we grew up in an urban setting, we have a conditioning, so then just preach in the urban setting and make the use of that conditioning to get mercy? Or should we actually consciously try to develop a connection with the rural setting?
Thank you very much. One thing which came to my mind was the meditation of Prahlad Maharaj when he was asked for blessing from Narsingadev. He said, well, I can go back to Godhead, but what about all those rascals and miscreants in the towns and cities? So our mood of followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are that we will go anywhere and everywhere. But same time, by practicing devotional service, Mahatma or a great soul is a person who is very much connected to simplicity. And that simplicity means that own crops, own milk, taking care of. So it means a practical thing. Simplicity is in many stages, in many levels, is a simplicity, your internal simplicity, but also external simplicity. So I think as a follower of Srila Prabhupada, he was emphasizing that external simplicity means having natural products which can actually sustain the mind, sustain the body very nicely. So this way, I think we should endeavor. There should be some endeavor. Because if we do not practice, if we do not endeavor, that means I'm in a certain stage and therefore I don't need to endeavor to come to a different stage. Prabhupada was not hesitating to live in the fields, right in Vrindavan. We've been building I think it was Krishna Balaram Mandir. He was living in a mud hut. One point he was living here, Bhaktivedanta Mana, with all the opulence, but same moment, next day, he was not hesitating to live in a mud hut. And many times he said, I like this much more. So simplicity means being connected to, you know, to more to the nature, I think, and see it as a simple mode of goodness, kind of a product of Krishna. Because Krishna lived in Vrindavan, and that means, you know, every day he was covered by mud, every day he was covered by cow dung, he was covered by, you know, yogurt. And even the mood of the queens of Dwaraka was like, you know, what they've been doing to you in Vrindavan, Krishna, right? They actually made you to be with the cows. They made you to have, you know, the cowherd stick and just, you know, herd the cows. You're a king. But Krishna was always in Vrindavan. His mind was always connected to the gopis, Rijabasis. So that's simplicity we should, I think, strive for one way or another. And we should try to take those people from the urban towns and at least introduce the simplicity of simple living, high thinking based on agriculture and cow protection. Go Brahmana Hitaya. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Actually, first time when I came across Hamsa Dutta Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple in San Francisco, And he shared with me one personal pastime he had with Srila Prabhupada, connected to the point that Srila Prabhupada was invited to Bangladesh, the holy places nearby Mayapur, and he went there with few disciples, including Hansa Dutta Prabhu, and local devotees organized few grass huts for them to stay. And Prabhupada was there in a grass hut with his disciples, and you know, it's like birds chirping and very nice scenic kind of surrounding. And Prabhupada, you know, takes a big breath, smiles widely, and he says, "This is how we should always live. You know, simple living, high thinking." And Hamsa Dutta Prabhu says, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I appreciate that, but you know, I'm a city boy, and I'm not sure if I will be able to handle that for too long." And Prabhupada looks at him. He says, "You are right. Even I'm not sure about myself because I grew up in the city too."
Kolkata. Jai.
So yeah, there is an interesting combination between ideal and real, which we should discover if we want to be successful in our mission. And of course, like talking about the opulences of Vrindavan, also acharyas are describing that Nanda Maharaj's cowshed, which is for 900,000 cows, if we remember, is covered with a roof made of solid ruby tiles. And it is supported by the emerald pillars. And, you know, something made of sapphire, etc. So it's like, what to speak of the Chintamani stones, they are everywhere, right? And Chintamani stones are much higher in value than any diamonds or any gemstones in this world. So that's to the simplicity of Vrindavan. And I was thinking that for nearly 50 years, we are making so many attempts to kind of start farm communities. Very difficult because of this simple point that we are preaching in the cities, and most of the cities, city dwellers, they can't relate to that idea. You know, for them, being in nature is just, you know, to have a short visit to the cottage house and back to the city. But I think the greatest mistake is that we thought that we can make city dwellers into farmers. You know, devotees who are city dwellers, they cannot, you know, it's very hard for them to become farmers. So that's why, you know, we fail so many times. It's like common sense, but unfortunately it's not very common. And you know, I was thinking that much easier and much natural way would be to convert farmers into devotees. Rather than trying to make devotees into farmers, why can't we make farmers into devotees? Because these guys, they know everything. They don't have to learn it. The only thing which is missing is Krishna. Just add Krishna and then they're there.
Very nice point.
And so, yeah, but for that, we need to help them to understand how to run their economy in a profitable way without killing the cow. That's the biggest hurdle. If we crack this one up, that's it. We can make unlimited number of farmers into devotees in no time. Because they all love cows. And they are very simple, and most of them believe in God. So it won't be difficult to convince them about importance of Krishna consciousness, right? But they need to live. And so if we figure that one out, I think that's going to be the biggest win for us, for our mission.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. Very wonderful point. If there are any other questions? Yes, Guru Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you. Very, very good class. I was just wondering, normally we're taught not to engage Krishna in our service. we should be serving Krishna. But it seems like the coward boys were engaging Krishna in their service. So could you expand a little bit on that?
Actually, more than cowherd boys engaging Krishna in their service, it was actually Lila Shakti as the potency and energy of Krishna, because she wanted to perfectly manifest the compassion potency of the compassion character of Krishna. So the Lila Shakti, she perfectly knows what Krishna wants, what he desires, and therefore she manifested in a such a way, she arranged it in a such a way that the cowherd boys, being fully assured and fully aware of protection of Krishna, and she even, it is mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that Krishna's meditation was that, oh, look at her, look at that Shakti. She instructs me to do things. And for that moment, for that small period of time, Krishna was bewildered by how she operates, how is the operation of the Shakti of Krishna, that she can bewilder me just for my pleasure. Because ultimately, Krishna resides in the heart of every living being. And he was thinking, well, these cowherd boys, they're entering death. But that's not in their karma. Their karma is not to die, because if they would die, they would give sorrow to me. Therefore, what's happening here? How is that? So it must be Lila Shakti. And this Lila Shakti, that's what bewildered Krishna for a moment. But then Krishna became happy, so he could manifest these pastimes. He entered and he expanded. He saved all the cowherd boys. So, it's all Lila, wonderful Lila. Just before all of you go, I would just like to read one last verse. It's again from Sri Manasiksha by Raghunath Das Goswami. And I think this one meditation actually encompasses everything we've been discussing in today's class. So he instructs the mind. He says, O mind, you should every day think the five nectars, worship, glories, meditation, listening to divine pastimes and offering obeisances, and worship Govardhan according to the rules. In this way, follow the instructions of Sri Rupa and obtain the direct service of Sri Sri Radha Giridhari, who are captivated by the god of amorous love in the company of their associates of Raj. So it speaks about the process, how to be fearless, meditation, worship, listening to the divine pastimes. And it also speaks about the true opulence of Vrindavan, and that is the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Giridhari. So thank you for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshmananda, Sri Sri Gonitai ki.